Hello.
Hello.
Everything good?
It took a while to connect, but I'm here now.
All right. We'll go ahead and get started. Hello, everyone. This is Vasil Park here. I'm joined by.
J. Agram.
And today we're going to be talking about our world building and the worlds that we are both, I'm still technically working on, and you're working on as well, correct?
I'm about to say, yeah, we're both still kind of working on it, but I think you're a bit farther along. Well, you're a lot farther along than I am.
Yeah, I have a bad habit of backtracking on things and changing them. So, I don't know. It changes constantly, and I may retcon a whole bunch of different stuff.
I thought it only counted as a retcon if you did it while the series is going. Technically speaking, it's not retcon yet, because,
Wait, what do you mean?
because I change a lot of stuff. I change a lot of stuff about Emporia like all the time, but because I haven't set anything in stone just yet. So I guess I have more freedom that way.
Yeah, there's some stuff that I haven't actually put out there yet, but it could have like a indirect effect on how I write going forward, which could end up contradicting with something I wrote earlier, so it could end up being a retcon, in a sense. Don't know, but I've only got one book out so far, and I'm still working on the second one. So, yeah.
I did ask it.
It might
I'm
not
just.
be too much of a retcon.
Don't know. I think it depends. Doesn't it depend on what it is you're actually changing?
I guess. I'm not 100% sure. All right, so, did you want to go ahead and start first, or do you want me to?
You can start first.
Okay. So the first topic that I wanted to talk about was kind of like the background of the world that I created and kind of go off on a little bit about how the process changed and how I just made several decisions. So the first draft of what would later become the planet, or the fictional planet I call Mestia, started out with I think I went into this before, about a, it was a story of a boy and his sister who had died and became a ghost. And it was about him trying to bring his sister back to life. And it was them kind of wandering around a desert. Kind of like, what was that PlayStation 2 game? Was it Ico or Echo or something like that? Or
You're talking about the one with the that they just made like the second, they just made like a basically a sequel to it recently. Was it Ico? Yeah, I think it was
Yeah. It was kind of in that vein of storytelling where it was just like them going along a quest. And it was to bring her back to life. And so from there, it was about that point that I had met Marion, who, again, he may or may not show up on the podcast. All depends on him. But after that, that's when I met him, and he introduced. He was a big artist who's going into animation, I think. I think he's still trying to do animation, and game design. And he had been working on his own story, Jornea. And then that's kind of where I got the basis for Mestia and decided to evolve it past this kind of desert world. And that's when it started taking off into a story that it became, that it's become now. From there, that's when I started doing more and more research and branching it out and actually developing it into, at this point, it's almost become a galactic story.
I think, yeah, because yeah, because yours is like both fantasy and sci-fi.
Yeah. And I kind of wanted to do that mixture just because I thought it'd be pretty interesting. So Mestia is the name of the planet, and the galaxy that it takes place in is called Zerkzestal. And that is the name for that comes from the word Xerxes, the name of a, I believe he was either a Persian king or some, it was some Middle Eastern country, and celestial. And I believe Xerxes translates to like hero or like one who rules over heroes or something like that. I forgot. And I'm still working on the star system around Mestia. However, yeah, I have the you have the actual planet Mestia, and it has two moons. One of them is called Awahina, and the other one is called Hane. And the sun is called Zolan. The planet of Mestia is divided into two parts. You have Gaia and then Midgard. This might be something that I'm thinking about retconning just because it doesn't make sense. It
what?
Breaks the laws of physics, and it not really breaks the laws, but it just doesn't make sense. And it's hard to maintain it.
Well, you're supposed to kind of make it make sense, you know? You're supposed to like,
yeah, that's what I'm trying to, that's what I'm saying. I'm probably going to end up retconning this when I think of something better. So Gaia is, all right, so you have Gaia and Midgard. Gaia is the surface world. So that's like the world that everyone lives on.
Basically a physical Earth, basically. Which is
yes. Mm-hmm. Well, it's the surface world. And then you have Midgard, which is three continents and a whole bunch of sky islands. Like they're just floating islands. They exist. I believe I had it to like 100 miles up in the atmosphere or in the sky, something like that. And I had it supported on a, and this is where I may end up retconning it because it, again, it feels like it's too, the threads are too loose, is that it's built, it's supported on magic. Like it exists in the sky, or it's sustained in the sky by a spell. And periodically, they have to go back and fix that spell to keep the spell, keep the those continents from crashing.
How many times do you have to do that?
A whole bunch of people. You have to have one on.
How many times? How many times is it done? Is it done once a year? Was this done once a year?
Is this done like? I don't know. I'm still working on the details of that. Yeah. Because I'm not even, I know, the thing is that to redo the spell expends your life. So all of these people end up dying to keep this spell in place. And it feels like it's too, like this kind of, that kind of storytelling is a little too loose and fast. And so I kind of want to change some stuff just to make it a little bit more consistent. So yeah, aside from Midgard and Gaia, well, Gaia is divided up into six continents. And Midgard is divided into three. I'm still kind of working on Midgard. I have some idea of what I want to do with it, but I don't 100% know just yet. And the thing is that when you take a look at the map of Mestia, which I there was a lovely artist by the name of Miss Hina, who had designed my map after a long period of us going back and forth. If you ever watch this, thank you. Thank you very much for your help. I can't express that enough. I know that I was a pain in the butt to work with. However, getting back on topic, all right, so if you look at the map of Mestia, you can see that there are three chunks missing out of, or it looks like there'd be like three places where it like there's nothing there. And it kind of you would look at it and be like, something is supposed to go there. And that's the portions where the planets were literally, or the continent was literally lifted out of the planet. And you end up with these large crevices. And part of the, all right, so those three continents were actually part of other continents, but they became their own when they were lifted straight out of the earth. On Gaia, you have, I think it was about 12 different, I think I had about 12 different countries. I'm only going to go through a couple of them. So the kingdom of Nerezia, or I'm sorry, the kingdom of Floriar, the Republic of Nerezia, which both of them together make up the empire. You have the Empire of Baguzavion, which is kind of based off of ancient China. The empire is kind of based off of the old European empire. The Kingdom of Teresa Risasinafia, which is a newly formed nation of vampires, ruled by three different queens. The state of Quvalion, the Union of Denezia, the independent state of Ahes, the state of Iliomati, which is based off of Egypt, which is pretty important to the story because that's where a lot of the world was founded from. Or a lot of civilization kind of crept up out of that place that considered Egypt, or the Egypt-like. You also have the Republic of Gaia Chi, which is based off of like India. It's like a mixture of like India and trying to think of the other place, but yeah, it's mostly kind of like India. Then you have the United Districts of Agos Bansa Kilagi, which is again a more newly formed nation of, and I'm gonna butcher this word, collection of islands. It's a collection of islands. I can't say that word.
Lego.
Yeah, whatever that word is, I cannot say it.
Lego.
Yeah, it's a collection of islands. And these islands are kind of like, it's supposed to be like the, kind of like the Indonesian islands, the Philippines, think Cambodia as well. I don't know, my geography is kind of bad.
Like in like the not the middle the middle like middle not East Asia, not like well yeah kind of East Asia because you said like the Philippines and stuff.
It's like Southeastern Asia.
Basically South Asia like that.
Yeah, it's more of the island countries. It's a loose collection of them, and they've all kind of banded that they're all made up of people who came from different countries to found this nation due to the oppression of m magicians. Or not, no, I'm sorry, not the oppression of magicians, but the oppression of certain ethnic groups, and they all fled to these islands, and they were led by a magician who was the son. I believe it was either the son or the I had it. Yeah, it was either supposed to be the son or a student of Merlin, and he led these people to these islands, and from there they found this magical, or they found this kingdom of mat, or this nation of magic magicians. And then you have the Republic State of Amana, which is kind of like a religious state. They have a the closest thing that I could think of at the moment is like a pope, or what's the word? A pontiff, kind of like a pontiff. Who rules over that state. And then you have Riima Republic, which is based kind of off of Italy, and is very, it's a neutral state. It does not get involved in anyone's politics, and they are actually protected by many different nations. Let's see. And I think that's about it for the physical world of Mystia, as much as I want to get into in this podcast. All right, so do you want to go ahead and go next?
Okay, so the idea for Emporia, well, because where I live at, I used to pass this place like every so often that was named Emporia. So I was like, ooh, I like that. So I was like, I'm gonna use, the name to call my world was gonna be called Emporia. Now, as you will find out probably later, I'm a big lover of like history. I love history. I love looking at other places and seeing, where people have been, what their culture is like, and how they lived their lives during that time period. But I always felt like there's so much you could draw from, and people only use mainly use the Middle Ages. So me being a big lover of history and a big lover of fantasy, I decided I was going to make, my own world, and I was going to base them either on a culture I liked or during a time period I like. So the world Emporia is this, that's the world. The world's name is Emporia. I have several continents that make up Emporia, and that is part, and they are basically an empire. Their empire, the countries were separated at first. They weren't part of the empire. However, they were brought under the empire by Hiramasa Yamamoto. He came from the country of, let me see. I wrote it down actually. No, because I have to have my notes because I'm ditzy like that. So when I write stuff down, I make sure I have it.
Yeah, I have notes.
So I have he's from the Shimane people, and the Shimane people were based basically on Eastern Asia, but mainly like Japan. They basically came over and they brought everybody together. They kind of decimated the people that were, they didn't decimate the people. What happened was that when they took over, they were going to take over and basically bring their culture influence over. But what ended up happening is that he ended up falling in love with a priestess who actually had Okay, magic plays a huge part in Emporia, like a really big part. The foundation for Emporia is that the goddess Jersey was alone by herself. She created Emporia to quell her loneliness, and the gift she gave to her children was the ability to use magic. She gave them this power in the form of the son of their son. So basically, magic is the lifeblood of every of basically the lifeblood of Emporia. It was given to them by the by their creator. So she gave them that, and for the first 1,000 years, couple of 1,000 years that humans were on Emporia, mortals were on Emporia, they lived their life, stress free. They were able to use magic whenever they wanted to. They were able to do this whenever they wanted to. They got kind of complacent. And they decided, well, we're going to try to do what Jiayi did and make people. They were kidnapping her angelic children, and they were using them and combining them, splicing them to create new creatures. They were giving birth to new creatures, and she was totally against this. So what she did was she punished she was going to destroy the world. She couldn't see past the hubris. What ended up happening was that her daughter Bella, the Celestis of Water and Kindness, decided that she wanted to spare the humans. So for 5 days and 4 nights, she sat and she pleaded with her mother. And her mother finally decided not, because she had, at this point, she had already shattered the world. The world had already been shattered by the issue. She was in the process of destroying it. But Bella got her to calm down and got her to realize that humans are not perfect. They weren't made like the Celestis were made. But the Celestis are her daughters. They are goddesses. They're not made like they like they weren't made like they were. They weren't made to be perfect. They were imperfect, perfect beings. So she didn't destroy the world completely, but what she did do, which is called the shattering, it's called the shattering. What she did do, she took magic away. She told him, if you can't use it in a good way, I'm going to take it away from you. And this lasted for about 2,000 years until the princess Almal was born. And she is actually the avatar of Jayashree herself. And she had the magical sight, which she was able to see. She was able to see the future and every future outcome. But once she took that route she was going to, the other outcomes would become basically locked to her. She could no longer see those paths. She could only see the path that she took once she took it. It's basically like you seeing three doors and you'd be able to see inside each door. And once you pick one, the other two doors basically shut. That's basically how her power works.
I
She
got that.
actually, yeah. So she basically belonged to the Desai people. The Desai people were very a family, a very close-knit people that believed in family structure and things like that. She was a priestess of those people, and she told her people that, that this is what was going to happen. But they didn't listen to her. That she fought. She didn't want them to fight. She wanted them to combine the Mekan people, and that did not happen. So it Hiramatsu ended up basically taking them over. But instead of just inflicting his culture onto them, he allowed them to keep certain aspects of their culture. He allowed them to keep certain things of their culture and things like that. So this angered his people that came with him because their goal was complete assimilation. They wanted everybody to be like them, and he listened to, because by this time he had married her. He listened to his wife, and he didn't. He allowed them to keep their culture. He wanted a more uniformed people to he wanted a more vibrant culture. And what ended up happening was she ended up getting killed by his supporters, which in turn, because he it wasn't supposed to be an empire. It was supposed to be basically him and his advisors ruling as a basically a joint government. But he ended up becoming an emperor and taking it over. So there are several continents or countries within Emporia, which are based off of either different cultures or are based off of time periods. Like for instance, Nikus, which is based a little bit off of France and Italy, I'll say basically it's based off of France and they say Milan and Venice, basically. And I took the name from Nice, France, basically. So Nice. I have Brixton, which was based off of a mixture off of medieval Britain and the dark Middle Ages of Britain, basically. That is your Middle Ages type of Britain type of thing. You have Wargrave, which was a mixture, I'm gonna say, of Scotland, Germany, and Ireland. And then you had Dedrich, which we argued about
Yeah,
Dedrich.
this one.
Yeah,
Yeah, this one.
we argued a bit about Dedrich because
If you
the
can
history.
prove me wrong, prove me wrong. Go ahead, prove me wrong.
Okay, so the history, the reason why I created Dedrich is because I've always been a fan of the move to the West in history books, basically how like the Western frontier had once they expanded westward, people came over to seek their fortune and things like that. So I said, what if I created a country within Emporia that basically refugees, those who don't have that much education, those who don't have the magic to succeed in the rest of the world in Emporia, they come to a place where they can make their own fortune. They don't have to have magic. They can go by their own will and do this their own. So basically what Dedrich was is supposed to be a mixture of the Western frontier and basically the American South Gothic type of thing. That was my combined thing that I made when I thought of that. And I basically
Right, I
thought
thought
about
there
making
was
it.
supposed to be a little bit of what's the like I'm gonna butcher this, like the bayous and stuff like that, and I think
Yeah,
like George.
like that I said, the American South, the bayous and things like that. They're basically the people there are supposed to be very hardworking people. People who have come to make their fortune and things like that. He's not too sure about this because he's like, it's kind of like, he said, it's kind of like, what did you say?
I said it. I've never seen a Western, and here's where. So I didn't know that you were gonna involve the bayous and stuff like that. I thought that was gonna be a separate thing because voodoo was a big thing around that area. And my thing was is that I thought it was just gonna be a pure Western type of deal.
No.
Because when you think of the West, you think of like the dry, arid desert places.
I thought of that too. And I do have some of those. Dedrich does have some. That's why it's called Dedrich, because of some of the dry places that you see. But you also have some of the rich farmlands that are near some of the rivers that are by there. That's the bayous by the.
Well, bayous are a swamp area.
Well,
That's.
you have swampy areas too. You have those areas. You have some areas that are very like to where crops cannot grow at all. You have some areas that are very rigid and are very rocky, mountainous, and dead ridge. Then you have some areas which is very few, which you can actually grow some things, but it's very limited into what you can grow.
And so
So it's.
my thought process was, since I was hearing Western, and you're going to be like, this is going to take place in a world of magic, I thought that you're going to try to do like a magic Western type of deal. And I'm like,
The people of Dedrich are people that are descendants of people who really didn't either have much magic or they came from the time, because there is a period between Brixton and the rest of the country where Brixton kind of rebels against the whole magic system in the first place. Some of them are refugees from that time where they don't have magic and they're against magic. So these people didn't have so much magic. Now there is magic in Deadridge because it's part of Emporia. Wherever you go in Emporia, there is some type of magic. There is going to be some type of magic, some type of mysticism in there. You have voodoo. You have those people who can shift and transform, shapeshifters. You have like werewolves and things like that. So there is magic there. I would say it's kind of like the least, kind of like where it's uncommon. It's uncommon for you to have magic in Deadwood. It's not rare, but it's uncommon.
All right, so the thing is that when you watch a lot of Westerns, you have the West, the cowboys fighting against the Native Americans, and the Native in those in a lot of those movies, you have the Native Americans being portrayed as either very spiritual or as complete savages. And it was very hard to for me to in my head think of, or I should say I still kind of feel this way, just because with those in the West, you had that heavy Puritan Christian background, which they looked down, they were very superstitious, and they hated anything, they thought anything to do with magic is witchcraft, and so it's hard to rectify that kind of contrast.
Do you want to know something? Do you know
What?
something? That's the reason why I picked it. For the simple fact is that when you have so much of something, you always gonna have those people who are against something. You're not gonna have everybody who's for everything.
Okay.
So what I wanted to do was I wanted to create a contrast because originally Emporia was supposed to be based on the fact that I thought that every time I picked up a novel about fantasy, that magic was always either portrayed in a bad light or was portrayed as something that somebody should not have, or that I think maybe because I was playing too much Dragon Age at the time, and Dragon Age has that whole thing where it's the Templars versus the mages, and I was like, what if I create a story where magic is the majority and non-magic is the minority, basically. And what I wanted to do with Deadwitch is I basically want to give, maybe you don't want to do magic. Maybe you don't want to have to feel like you want to be part of magic. Or maybe you can't make it in the other countries in Emporia. Maybe you don't have the social standing and stuff like that. So that's basically what a lot of immigrants did, was a lot of immigrants came to America because they didn't have the wealth or they didn't have the thing in their country, so they came over here. Just like when people came from the east to the west, they left their family behind to make their fortune. Basically, I wanted to make that a place where you could, basically a place where you can do what you wanted to do. Now, is it all going to be like that? No. Some people come to Deadridge and they can't make their fortune, and it's like some places are kind of outlaw. They're kind of lawless land sometimes are out there. Some people now. I actually don't know if I told you about the Cabal before.
I think you brought it up briefly.
Okay, so the Cabal basically are a group of women. It's a society of women of cannibalistic magic users. What they do is they seduce men. They try to get two things out of these men. They try to get children, and they eat them. Once they become pregnant, they target men who have magic or have magic capabilities. They eat the men's hearts, basically, so they can add to their magical powers and things like they can add to their magic. They are based actually in the bayous of Deadridge.
Okay.
So that's their point of that. Then I have the capital of Emporia, basically the capital city of Emporia.
Hey, real quick
Okay.
though. While you were talking about that, that reminded me of a story that I think you should probably read. I think I've told you about it before. It was called World Customized Creator.
You did tell me about this.
I think you should give it a read.
You did tell me about this, and I was like, oh no. I was like, oh no.
That story, there is, all right, so you have the vast majority of people being magic users, and they're divided into one of the four elements. And you can like mix in different people or different elements to create different things. Like you can use earth and water magic to you to create poison, or you could use wind magic to hear over very long distances. Fire magic, I think, can create like helps with weapons, I think it was, or something like that. I forgot. However, you have then you have the powerless people.
That anime for this?
What?
Is that anime for this?
No, I don't think so. Actually, I think they're coming up with an anime for it, but I don't think there is one.
I'm aspiring for what does I have an anime? I'm mad.
All right.
Right,
So
so.
then you have a fifth type of people called the powerless people. The powerless people are completely subjugated by the people with magic. And however, to compensate for this, the powerless people tend to be a lot physically stronger than the people with magic. However, their magic is still flourishing and makes their makes it so that the magicians can subjugate the powerless. In the story, you meet, I think his name is Yosuke or Yos something, I forgot. And he is supposed to be the dark god. And over the story, they get into this point where they say that the dark god is not supposed to bring the end of the world, but he the when the that person appears, he is supposed to it's kind of like a secret knowledge that's only known by a few people that he doesn't bring destruction to the world, he brings change to the world. And so you have this religion that you find out that was completely fabricated to kind of counteract the idea of this dark god who brings change to the world, and they kind of viewed him as evil.
Of
And
course they
so
did.
you find out that the person who delivers, who tells you that the dark god is actually to bring change to the world, is the king of a people who a nation of powerless people. And when you were talking about Dead Ridge, that's kind of what that came to mind, is just this nation of people who can't use magic. And I think it
Okay.
also, the story's going into this deal where they're saying that there's a history between the people with magic and the powerless people, that when the dark god appears, the roles are reversed, where magic users become subjugated and the powerless people flourish. And they're kind of like seesaws.
I mean, I think that kind of happened in Emporia a bit because when Jesse shouted out the world, people kind of had new races of beings came into play. You had the beast people, which were hu originally humans, but because of where they were, as long they kept assimilating to the point where they took on animal characteristics and things like that. And then you have the Surkers, which were humans who made it with giants, with the long gone giants, and they are really these really tall people that have a really originally it was supposed to be a magic immunity. It was supposed to be a magic immunity, but then I was like, yeah, that's kind of too OP. So what I did was I made it magical resistance. They're born with like magical resistance. And I also got an idea. I think I got the idea from you. Basically, they're born for like, because I was kind of, when I made them originally, I told you I'm a big lover of Dragon Age, and I think I was playing Inquisition way too much because as I looked at them, they kind of reminded me of the Qunari. And I was like, that's no good. That's no good. So I had to actually go back to them and go back
Yeah. I
to
don't
the
know what to
drawing
tell
board.
you for that one.
Huh?
I said, I don't know what to tell you for that one.
No. Well, I had actually went back to the drawing board with them, and so originally, because originally they had brown skin, and they were going to have different shades of purple eyes, but because I wouldn't have been able to distinguish them from the other race, the other two races of people that I'm going, because three, don't say three or two, three races of white people have brown to dark skin, brown like our complexion or darker skin. So they wouldn't have been be able to be distinguished from the other people. So what I thought about, and you laugh, you're like, well, they're gonna take the Jolly Green Giant type of approach to it. What I did was I said I was gonna make this skin tone kind of green. Greenish. But then that reminded me of freaking, what's that manga we just finished reading? We just finished reading about the guy who got reincarnated into his mom's a healer, and his dad's an adventurer, and his and basically his dad slept with the maid and the mom, and so now he has like two sisters now.
Oh yeah, that series. I don't remember what it's called. It's like Musou something.
Yeah. Because I went back and I was actually reading, and I was like, oh my God. Now I have to redo them. But you have the Circus who can boast magical resistance. You have the humans who are more well-rounded, the beast people who are physically, they take on the physical attributes of whatever animal their people are descended from. So you have people who are, that are closely related to cats. You have people that are closely related to, say, like snakes and things like that. I'm actually coming up with two, I'll say three more countries. One I want to be based off of an African society, but I didn't want to do, I because I was actually watching Black Panther again, and I realized I really do like the fact that they had that one tribe that was actually up in the mountains in comparison to them being like in like, yeah, because we see that all the time, and I'm like, I know there's mountains in Africa. I know they're not just gonna be just, because usually what they do, they either borrow from Egyptian history or they take from the other tribes. Like they don't never do like, well, what if they were in the mountains and things of that nature? So I actually like that. And I have another country that was just gonna be based off of Hispanic influences. So I'm still working on those two, and then I have a country for the Beast People and how I was going to do that. So those are my last three countries I actually have to work on. Oh, and I'm talking, and I did not talk about my capital, Kwe. Kwe was basically based off of
That was
Thailand. Yeah, I know, because I actually meant to talk about it. But Kwe was based off of Thailand. Basically,
That's unique. I didn't know you did that.
Because originally it was supposed to be based off of India, because that's what I based Alam's people off of, was the Indian people. But then I looked at it forward, I said no, because at the end of the day, when it goes back further, there's supposed to be a combine between the Meccan people and the Desai people, who were Alam's people. So what I did was I was looking at architecture that I could see that could be like a mixture between the two, and Thailand came up. So I started doing some researching, and I named my capital of Emporia Kwe, which is the great green jewel of Emporia, because of the castle. Their castle is green. Green bricks, and it has very green, lush plant life around it. It's known for its very lush plant life because there's a river going through the country. So it's very known for its vibrant, rich, lush agriculture. It's very beautiful. And it also has a volcano that actually erupts flowers once a year. It erupts flowers. So it's by the capital, so It's mostly a big celebration and things like that. So it's very vibrant, very beautiful. And this was Hiramasa basically built Keiwei to basically honor his wife and what she wanted, which was the unification of all the people of Emporia, which is why they tend to marry basically foreigners into their bloodline for the royal family. So, because originally when I did that, I was thinking like, wait, their wives are the wives and people that they marry into the bloodline are kind of too far out in between, because the next son who becomes the second emperor, he actually marries a woman from Nikus, and that actually starts the process of introducing, the battle mages into Emporia and the occultists into Emporia, which are the two groups that help the royal family keep. The battle mages are under the Terran. The Terran are basically, how can I explain it? The Terran are basically kind of like S-class mages, basically. The battle mages are basically like the army. And the occultists are kind of like basically like spies. Spies or information gatherers or things like that. So that's how that worked. And so that's basically, the gist of Emporia. I'm still in the way of working with it.
Okay. All right. Was that all you had for that?
That's all I had for that.
Okay. You kind of touched into the creation
No.
myth of your story a bit, and
Yeah.
I kind of want to, all right, I kind of want to go into my creation myth just a little bit, because
Okay.
I'm only going to do part one right now, and part two is going to be the next podcast, or part two and part three. Again, I'm still kind of touching up some stuff, so some things may change from now and in the future when I actually get this published. But to kind of make this story, to kind of abridge this story. All right, so it starts off with the goddess, the divine entity creating. She created the divine, or she created the universal tree, or the universe tree, kind of based off of the world tree in Norse mythology. And with that, she created the divine spear, and or I mean the divine halberd. And with the halberd, she created darkness, light, heat, and cold, and kind of like the division between yin and yang. And with that, she created from that division, she created energy. And from that energy, she created life and death. And she sealed away death and spread life through this pocket dimension or this pocket space. And she planted the world tr or the universe tree, and it caused it to grow from the energy that she had created. And above the tree, she created her throne. And from the split between yin and yang, she created two deities. And throughout this mythology, I always make the distinction between a deity and a god. A deity is someone who has been created by the goddess. They've either been raised to that status from a lesser being to be becoming a deity, or she just created them outright. And so from heat and cold, She created the two deities of yin and yang, and there are brother and sister, and the brother I've chose to leave his name a mystery. Even I don't know what his name is. Just for like historical purposes.
My question, Anna, I have a question about, so did you not just, you just didn't come up with a name for him, or you just decided, you just came up with a name for him and you just forgotten it? You just didn't come up with for him.
Both. I purposely decided that I didn't want him to have a name. And this is supposed to be representative of the fact that his name is lost throughout time, throughout the story. And I kind of got this idea from playing Dark Souls. Within Dark Souls, you have Gwyn, the Lord of Sunlight, and his three plus children. We find out that he had a fourth child in Dark Souls 3 in the Ring City DLC. However, his firstborn, we find out that his name has been wiped from history.
I know who you're talking about now.
Yes. We actually fight him as a boss in Dark Souls 3, the Nameless Deity. But again, he has no his name is lost. We don't know what his name is. So that the deity of water, he's supposed to be representative of the fact that his name has been lost. The other one, whose name is only known to a very select few people, because when you read history, it just says the deities of fire and water, of those scriptures that you can't, or those tales that you can find, because this one is so old that most people don't know about it. And so her name, the sister's name, is Shan Grima. And I forgot what the meaning of the name was. I think I was like, I forgot. I gotta look it up. I have it written down somewhere, but I forgot what the name means. And these two deities, when they were born, one of the she the deity of water had created had given her bless or had blessed her for blessed the goddess for creating it. The deity of fire, in his blessing, ended up burning the goddess, and the deity of water thought that that was an affront, that was kind of blasphemous to do, and they kind of got at it for a bit, but the goddess split them up and told them that they were not allowed to fight each other. They were never allowed to ever cross swords, and they were both punished. And they kind of went their ways. And the two of them decided that, or the goddess had left them to their own devices. And so the two of them decided that they wanted to create life. And so they created the old ones. And they are a collection of numerous beings whose shapes and forms are very weird and varied. And this kind of concept of the old ones, if you can't tell, is from H.P. Lovecraft, is from Lovecraftian horror. And so after creating their old ones, the two of them started interacting with their creations in different ways. The deity of water decided that he was going to intermingle with his creations because they all loved to dance. They were all created to dance and to worship in their own specific ways. So the deity of water began to interact with his creations and dance with them. The deity of fire stood away from them and just kind of oversaw them. And so the deity of fire, looking over at the deity of water and how he was interacting with his creations, thought, you are embarrassing yourself as a deity. You should be more professional. And so eventually, over time, that kind of thought and mentality kind of corrupted him, or corrupted her, and it began to it began her those kind of emotions began to seep out, and it actually began to poison her creations. And that kind of madness eventually began to spread, and it began to spread and seep everywhere. And so eventually the deity of water found that his creations had begun to be affected by her madness, by what she was doing. And so in order to prevent this kind of wide, and she the deity of water began to fight his own sister. And because the two of them were created equally, neither one of them could gain an upper hand. And so the goddess, or the deity of water, called out to the goddess and asked for help. She appeared with her halberd in hand and said, "If I give you this, I'm going to have to punish you because I gave you the instruction not to fight." And so he said, "Yes, fine, I'll take the punishment if I can stop this mad if I can stop the madness from consuming my creations." And so he took the halberd from her and ended up fighting his sister, and he cut her into 8 different pieces.
Excessive.
However,
So it's kind of excessive. Why 8 pieces?
because I use a lot of mythology from different, or I use a mixture of mythology when I was creating this world myth. And so, those of you not familiar with a lot of mythology or mythological tales, in Japanese mythology, you had Izanagi and Izanami. And when Izanami gave birth, she ended up giving birth to a whole bunch of god, or yeah, a whole bunch of gods that became like the islands of Japan, or no. It was a whole bunch of other gods. And the last one that she gave birth to was Kagu, or I forgot. He was a god of or a kami of fire. And he ended up burning her, and ended up she ended up dying in childbirth. And Izanagi was so distraught by his wife's death that he ended up cutting their son into 8 different pieces. And those 8 different pieces became 8 islands of Japan. So that's where that came from. The deity of water ends up cutting the deity of fire into 8 different pieces. And from that, after that had ended, the goddess came down and wanted to get more involved because because he had asked for help. And so the goddess, wanting to stop the madness, but she didn't want to destroy their creations, decided that she was going to put them to sleep. And she wanted to drain away their power and drain away their madness. And so what she did was she took from the world, from the universal tree, she took a seed, or she, yeah, she took a seed and burnt it and turned it into ash. And the seed, now ash, became it became the cradle for all of the old ones. And each one of them had their own cradle. And each one of them became the sun or the stars, the moons, and the planets, with each one being either of greater power or smaller power, depending if they're a moon, planet, or a star. And so from there, the what was it? They were put into sleep and they were hidden. And she created a world for them in their sleep and hid them behind a great door. Keep their madness from kind of driving everyone insane. Or, yeah, to keep the insanity at bay. And so that's kind of where that H.P. Lovecraftian themes come from, that within every single planet, moon, and star, there is an old one that if they wake up or they start moving around in their sleep, they could end up driving everything around them insane, just because they're such great cosmic beings. So after this had been done, the dust had kind of receded into the dark, into the universe. And that whole process of burning, of the burning the seed and it becoming ash is kind of reminiscent of how matter and antimatter or matter and dark matter work. And from there, after everything was set and done, the goddess turned to the deity of water and gave him his punishment, saying that he was going to lose his spirit and he would be forced, he would lose his deity, he would lose his status as a deity and be forced to wander around the around creation for all eternity. So he was given his punishment and he left. From there, the from the eight pieces of the deity of fire, she removed his her spirit, and those two became the first angels. And the body pieces were cast all over the universe to prevent to prevent her bones from doing anything outlandish or anything crazy. And that's kind of where I want to end that, because that's part one of three of the world creation myth. I haven't even gotten on to the actual world creation.
I can say, well, for mine, you have basically you have Jairus, who created the world. You have her daughters, her 12 daughters, which they embody certain elements. We have Vela, which is kindness, wisdom, and water. You have oh, let me get my notes, all my notebooks, because there are 12 of them. And I have changed some names because originally I had like five other names that didn't make sense. So I had to go back and change some of their names. Because Jayashree's name actually, I think in either Indian or what I don't know what language, but it means celebration. So I gave each of her daughters a name that meant something. Now you have Azaea, which is the goddess of beauty. She's the goddess of love, beauty, and art. So basically a patron god. You have Alexius, which is she's the god Celestis of basically children, protection, and healing. Hazia, which is a wind, weather, and the sky. Mistilov, which is of vengeance and of whispers. You have Kadrian, which is a war, fire, and fortune. Samar, which is of death, sleep, and night. Petro, which is of animals, harvest, and hunting. And Karami, which is of culture, glory, and riches. Now, Vella, out of all of them, I say Vella is the one that interacts with humans the most, with Samar being the one that interacts with them least. Hey, when you die in Emporia, once you die, you go to the Nexus, which is where you are going to be judged. And you can either go to the Solstice Paradise, which is basically Eden, or you're going to be stuck in the Nexus with Samar. Now, Samar's design, I actually kind of like, I actually have to thank you for this. It's when we were playing Smite, and I think one I don't know which god is it, but he has like the feather mask.
Al Quash,
Yes.
the god of the dead,
So I
of
ended up
horrific
liking
decay, the god of horrific decay.
that design so much that I was like, you don't see that for a god of death so much. So I ended up looking up Mayan culture and Mayan headdresses. And basically, she's dressed in like the Mayan fashion, and she has the headdress because out of all the goddesses, Jayashree and Samar, you don't see their faces. Jayashree's dress and whatever depiction she is in, she's basically looks like a bride with either a veil, with a veil covering her face. So she's just in very bridal attire, but she only has like a veil over her face. Samar has the mask over her face with the feathers covering her face, but it is said that she's like, that's the most beautiful sight you see before you die is the gods of death coming to get you, coming to take your soul to the Nexus. I also have things in my story called, all right, so I'm a big lover of fairy tales. I blame Disney. I've been working with Disney since I was like little, so I've been very much in love with fairy tales and things like that. So I have these things called divine mysteries, which are based on certain fairy tales. Now, I might use the same fairy tale, but because of how it's taken, it might be in a different context. Like, I know the Chinese version of Cinderella, she didn't have a fairy godmother. She had a talking fish, I think it
Okay.
was. So things like that. It might not be an object that might be a divine mystery. It might be a creature. It might be a thing. It might be a thing. It might be a weapon. It might be a collection of things. Like, I know the garb of the princess is actually based on Cinderella. It's basically supposed to be a bride's outfit, a princess's outfit with glass slippers and a silver gown and a crown. And once you match all of them together, you're supposed to be able to basically have high luck and be able to basically have high speech, basically able to talk your way out of anything. But the
Okay.
garb, nobody's been able to piece all the pieces together because there's a crown, there's a dress, there's shoes, and I want to say there's a ring. I know, and another divine
Wait,
mystery.
so hold on. Is that like supposed to be one divine mystery, or are they separate ones? Is it like a set?
It's a
Is it a
set.
set? It's a set, and you can't, it does nothing until all of them are together, right? Is that what I'm under? Is that what you're saying? Okay. Okay, I gotcha.
You have like, I think another divine mystery I have is basically a mirror, which is the mirror from Snow White, which basically tells you what you would want to know. But you have to give the mirror something in return for your answer. These things have been infected with, not infected, but they have over the years been saturated in so much magic that they have taken on characteristics and things like that. These are ancient relics, basically. And we don't know how many divine mysteries that there are in Emporia. I would say there's only been, I would say there's only been five so far that have been actually put together and been used. But at the point and when I'm writing the story, you don't see them.
Okay. So they're a plot MacGuffin that doesn't show up very often.
I mean, because they're like, they're OP. Why would you want them to show up so often?
I know there's certainly like, in your favorite series, Fate Stay Night, all those plot MacGuffins show up a lot.
Can I defend Fate Stay Night real quick? Can I defend
I'm just pointing that out.
it? Can I defend that real quick?
It's not an egg.
It's only for
Huh?
7 days. They're only there for 7 days.
I'm just saying, within the context of the story, the plot MacGuffin shows up a lot. That's all I'm saying.
I might amend it because, like I said, it still hasn't been fully written in stone yet. So I'm still working out kinks and stuff to it and whatnot. It feels like whenever I work on Emporia, it feels like I'm 2 steps there and I'm 2 steps back. Because I've been working on it for a while. Not as long as you've been working on Nicaea, but I've been working on Emporia for like, I want to say about almost 6 years now.
Hasn't really been that long.
I've been working at it since I was in Northern Virginia. So, yeah,
Yeah.
been that long since I was 19. 19, wait, no, because that'd be longer than that. 19.
Yeah, because I'm 27 now, so.
My God, it's really been like almost 10 years.
Yeah. All right, so was that about it?
That is about
Okay, so I think we're done with this episode. Real quick before we go, though, anything interesting that you've been doing for the last
Ooh, ooh,
while?
ooh. Okay. So I finally did it. I finally put rain on Wattpad.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Yep.
So I could not put my J.A. Grimm up there for some odd reason. They would not let me put that name. But if you look for Jade Amber, you'll be able to find Rain on Wattpad. And
Okay.
I should
Try
be
it.
updating within this week.
Oh no, try it again because it might have been like the like try a different way to spell it or something like that because it might have been like a name that was already taken or something.
Okay,
That might have been what it was.
I'll try.
Spell it with like a Y or something like that. I don't know.
Spell with a Y.
Grim, so Grym.
Oh, you only press the I. Okay.
Yeah. Well, for me, I've been trying to work on. I've just now published or just now posted an update to Mystical Awakening Online. I've been trying to work on Tenets of the Rakanthe, which I'm going to get into what those are in the next episode or the next podcast or next. It's either going to be the next podcast or the podcast after that.
Okay.
One of those two. That and I have been playing Dark Souls Remastered.
So people, I'm gonna let you know now. Don't expect him to get anything done if he's playing Dark Souls.
What do you mean? I can multitask.
Did you post a chapter today?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I have. Someone comp Actually, I had someone who was giving me a hard time because, all right, So when I wrote Mystical Awakening online, I wrote it from the like I took a lot of inspiration from Dark Souls. And so all of my throughout the entire story, you have a whole bunch of items, and those items are supposed to tell a story. And so one dude or whoever it was got on there and started ranting, saying that, oh, why do I have to read a whole bunch of lore notes and stuff like that? Well, aren't you supposed to be having a story where like the main all the characters are in dire straits and everyone's dying and stuff like that? I'm like that this has a point to it. I'm not just writing a whole bunch of lore stuff just to be writing lore stuff. There's a point to it. So yeah, I have updated Mao. I am playing Dark Souls and working on Mao, and I'm also practicing drawing right now. So
Okay,
I can multitask.
I would say I used to draw. I just didn't have the patience for it anymore, so I let my drawing skills go to like the wayside. But also for those of you and that read fan fiction, I am still writing my fan fiction. I have not stopped. I've just been working on Rain and Emporia for a while, so I'll probably publish. Probably honestly, I probably will publish my last written fan fiction. But then, like before, either before the summer starts or before the summer ends, and this will probably be the last one I'll probably write for a long period of time, because I really do want to get Indignation started, so I probably won't have enough time to be writing my fan fiction as much as I want to. So, yeah, so I'm under Ray of Jade for my fanfiction.net page. So if anyone wants to read the existing stories that are there, they probably won't stay there that long. But you can go ahead and read my early work that I wrote when I was much younger.
So before we do, we always gotta have the shameless self-promotion. So in the doobly-doo, you can find all my information, her information. You can follow or watch me on Twitch. I'll probably be playing on Memorial Day. You can find me Angel Vaughn and Wattpad. You can find me as Vasil Park, and you can go to Amazon to find my book, Immortal Presage. And you can follow me on Twitter under Mao, so MAO underscore 108. And then I'm on mysticarchives.wordpress.com.
Okay, so as you know, I've recently moved to Wattpad. You can also find me on Royal Road Legends, though I probably won't update as often on there as I do on Wattpad. I'm under J.A. Grimm on Royal Road Legends. You can find me on Twitter. I'm Red Jade on Twitter. And I did have a WordPress for Rain, but it is out of commission right now. So I have to get back to you later on that. And that is about it.
All right. Thanks for listening. Y'all have a great day. Great Memorial weekend. Vasil out.
Enjoy your weekend. Bye, everybody.
Bye.